Maine lawmakers are home after the legislative session. What did they accomplish and what's still left to be done? The legislature runs in two-year cycles, and this legislative session was the shorter of the two, which means lawmakers didn't take up as many bills as last year. Still, there was plenty to debate and plenty to do. Lawmakers started the session facing a budget shortfall and right off the bat had to come up with a supplemental budget to balance the ship. Then there were the issues of Medicaid expansion and welfare reform, drawing deep political divisions between the two parties. Governor LePage issued a record number of vetoes, angering Democrats, but Republicans say many of those bills were designed as traps. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will discuss the legislative session with leaders from both parties and with MPBN State House Bureau Chief. Maine Calling wraps up the session with legislative leadership. But first, this news update. From the MPBN studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. The State House is closed today, and most legislators are enjoying a long holiday weekend, but not our guests. They're in to answer your questions about the legislative session. We've got Senate President Justin Alfond in the Portland studio with me, House Republican Leader Ken Fredette in our Augusta Bureau, and State House Bureau Chief for MPBN, A.J. Higgins, and the State House Bureau Chief as well, to talk about the legislative session that just technically wrapped up, though I know you guys are probably coming back. If you'd like to join our conversation, the number 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Our email address is talk@mpbn.net. You can tweet us. We are at Maine Calling, or you can post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. And welcome you all to Maine Calling today.
Thanks for having us.
Good afternoon.
AJ, why don't I start with you, and by going back to the beginning of this session, what were lawmakers facing out of the gate?
Well, what was interesting, Jennifer, was the I would say Democrats took the offensive on the revenue sharing issue. We were looking at a possible reduction of around $40 million for revenue sharing funds. And that was a real concern for a lot of municipal leaders who had basically sent a message to the legislature that they would have to raise property taxes at home if these revenue sharing funds were to be depleted. And the legislature came up with a sort of an interesting plan, or Democrats sort of came up with an interesting plan to fund revenue sharing by taking money from the rainy day fund of around $21 million. And then I think there was another $4 million that came from another account. And basically where that left the administration with a situation where they really didn't want to see the rainy day fund depleted.
All right, we're hearing a little bit of mic noise, so if something's going on up at Augusta, I'll let you guys know that. Why don't I start here with you, Justin Alfond. How did starting the legislative session off with first this budget shortfall and then the big sort of acrimonious debate over revenue sharing, did that set the tone for the entire session, in your view?
Well, what I think it did get us all back to is this budget of desperation, which that was the term that Commissioner Millett used describing the governor's two-year budget when he released it last year in January. And so we were still picking up much of the mess that this budget had in it, and included in it was a $40 million revenue sharing piece, which we made a promise to our local towns and communities that we were not going to shift those costs to them. And so Democrats initially reached out to Republicans, and we had good support at the start. That support just changed a little bit, I think, when the governor came out against it. But we together passed a revenue sharing piece to ensure that $40 million would be actually put to our towns and communities, ensuring that property taxes or cuts to services would not happen during this year.
And Ken Fredette, do you agree with Justin?
Well, surprisingly, no. And, consider Justin a friend and respect his position on this, but I think reality is that if you go back and look at why was this $40 million problem even created, and it was created because of the bipartisan budget that was passed in the 120 earlier in the year, in 2013, where we basically said, we're going to go out and find $40 million in what they called tax credits or tax expenditures. And that committee went out and worked all summer and all fall and completely failed, utterly failed in finding any cuts, that, quite frankly, or any credits, tax credits, that the legislature could endorse in filling this $40 million hole. That left us with revenue sharing as the default position in that language. And so it, quite frankly, was a failure on the part of the legislature to fulfill its obligations that it set up for itself. And so the really sad part about that is that when this bill was ultimately voted on in the Appropriations Committee, a committee that I sat on in the 125th, there was not one Republican sitting at the table. And there was no reason to take that vote that night, that it had to get done that night. And I think that really set the tone for the rest of the session.
So that was the first budget showdown. And then, we had that. We've since passed our second budget that just a few days ago, a few long days ago. One of my questions, I want to step back a little bit from the inside politics, and I'll have all three of you all talk about this. This has been a year following many other years of cuts, 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 cuts. Who's going to feel that this year? Who, when all is said and done and it's summertime in Maine or it's the, fall and everything's into effect, where are we going to feel the difference between now and last year? A.J. Higgins.
I think that some of the big losers in terms of people who aren't going to benefit, obviously the huge area would be Medicaid expansion, which was a big push by Democrats. We started this session by having a meeting with Democratic leaders. They said they were going to make it their primary and singular, almost primary objective of expanding Maine Care, or as we call Medicaid here in Maine, to approximately 60,000 Mainers. There were at least three efforts to try and do that. One remains on the governor's desk that was passed in the last day of the session, but none of these have been able to gain the types of overwhelming majority votes that are needed in both the House and the Senate to be able to turn back a governor's veto. That's clearly, probably the biggest singular issue that was resolved, remains unresolved by this legislature.
Justin, the Medicaid expansion aside, who's going to feel this? Who's going to feel the cuts that we've had this past year? Is it towns and cities? Is it individuals?
So it's going to be the whole gamut, Jen. And when you look at revenue sharing being cut by $60 million still, this is a $200 million program that we cut to $125 million. Every single taxpayer in Maine is going to feel that some way, whether it's going to be increased property taxes or it's going to mean less services. And I just want to remind the listeners that all of this was started again in this budget of desperation, where we're still making grounds, we're still having to make up from the $400 million of tax cuts that were never paid for. This was the 125th gimmick to propose a tax cut without paying for it. So now the youngest are going to feel it. Head Start is going to be cut. The elderly are going to feel it because the property tax fairness is not where it once was. So we are paying for this unfunded tax cut that mostly benefited the rich over and over. And it's really too bad that we couldn't come to some sort of agreement with our Republican colleagues, and Ken and I are friends, and we work together on most things. But this is, most of Mainers are going to feel all of these budget cuts.
Ken Fredette, where, from your perspective, do you believe people will, the cuts, who will the cuts impact?
Well, I think that the tax cuts that Justin's talking about if you look at actually revenue projections, the income tax revenues are actually exceeding expectations, and so I think those tax cuts were the right thing to do. I mean, if you actually look at DHS spending and school spending in the state, it's stayed relatively flat funded. And so the reality here is what we have is a budget that failed to actually make really any substantial cuts in any real programs. Democrats were not willing to do that. The fact that we were able to pass a budget earlier in 2013 was merely because we didn't want to have a state government shutdown. And so it was not that it was a great budget that we wanted to pass, but it was really a choice of two positions that were not very good. And so I think the other issue is that what we still see, having served on appropriations in the 125th, and I see this year as well, we continue to cannibalize the rest of the departments in the state budget so that we can continue to fund growing expenses in the Department of
Health
and Human Services.
You know, Ken, I'm going to stop you right now. I don't want to use the phrase cannibalize on this program. We could have a whole program about a debate about whether or not, you know, by cutting revenue and then saying, you know, how to divvy up what's left is cannibalizing. I really want to talk about the accomplishments and what happened in this past legislative session. So let me throw it back to you and ask you, you said that you, Justin said, you worked together well on most things. What are accomplishments that Democrats and Republicans came together for this past legislative session?
Well, I think I'd go back to the earlier part of the 126 when we really passed the bipartisan energy bill, talking about bringing natural gas into Maine and New England to lower energy prices. I think the $150 million bond package we all worked together with the governor on was done in a bipartisan fashion. And I think ultimately, later on in the past 2013, pay in the hospitals were all, I think, bipartisan accomplishments that we can be proud of.
Justin.
Go ahead, AJ. I was going to say that there were also some shared credits that went on in the passage of these two supplementals. In the first one, we managed to bring back $500,000 for Head Start, and were able to stave off $9.5 million in cuts for schools. And in the second one, I'd say that the big winners there would be a group of people that the governor identified very early on, the developmentally disabled, approximately 400 of them that were on waiting lists, and it sort of became an icon for the governor in his discussion with Democrats over welfare reform. And insofar as whenever Democrats would talk about expanding Medicaid, or the governor would point to, well, what about these people? How do we say no to them, but yes to what he would refer to as an able-bodied young person? When we have these people who clearly cannot fend for themselves, and Democrats and Republicans came together on that to provide about $5 million that actually should start helping about 400 of these people in terms of home care services and other benefits.
Justin Alfon.
So I think AJ's picking up a great point around the wait list, Section 21 and 29, and really addressing that. I think we also put a ton of money together for our nursing homes to ensure that our most critical places where our folks that we care so much about can stay locally in communities across Maine. And then I would also highlight the Joint Select Committee on Workforce and Economic Future. In the first part of the session, we really tackled workforce issues. We know Maine is a graying state. It's an elderly state. And we've got tons of businesses that need more and more trained workers. That's how we spent the first part of the year. And then the second part of the year, this session, we really together built a $50 million small business bond that just got overwhelming supports last week. And this is going to help some of our innovators. It's going to help our entrepreneurs. It's going to help people with loans. It's going to help some of our most iconic businesses and nonprofits really grow their businesses. And we need to do, and I think we've done a pretty good job together, of trying to figure out how we create a better business climate here in the state of Maine.
You were talking about the $50 million small business bond, Justin. Will that go to voters? I mean, it got overwhelming support in the legislature. Is the governor, has he given any indication whether he's going to allow that to go forward?
The governor basically said he supports zero bonds, and he's going to look at each one of them on its own basis. I hope that he supports all of them, but I think the votes that Democrats, Republicans, and Independents gave to all six of them hopefully give them all the support they need to get to voters in November. And we desperately need to keep thinking about how we support our small businesses. Every economist in Maine talks about, you know, we don't have a small business problem. We have a small business problem getting to medium-sized businesses and medium-sized businesses getting to large businesses. And that's where we really can keep hiring more and more skilled workers and get more Mainers to work.
Ken Fredette, are Republicans supporting this bond?
Well, I think there was in the House, some of the bonds had closer votes than you'd like to have seen. You need 101 to get them over the threshold. And there were some that were, closer than I'd like to have seen. I think the governor's going to take a close look at these. Whether or not he vetoes them, and that's ultimately his decision. And then we'll have to talk in our caucuses about where that ends up.
I was just curious, as we discuss bonds, we were talking about it down here in the newsroom when we found out how the bond package was actually going to be constructed. And it seemed to me that perhaps leadership could have come at this with a single bond as opposed to these six or seven individual bond proposals. And in doing so, does it not make it easier to defeat some of these measures? And might they have been preserved had there just been a single bond question as opposed to several components of it?
So from my perspective, AJ, and to the listeners, absolutely. We wanted to have one bond package for Mainers to vote on. It ensures that we are looking at the state, and we are looking at the state with any type of bonding. And it ensures that each one can hopefully work together as a collaboration, that we're a small state. We need to be working together when we're thinking about small businesses. But unfortunately, one of the prerequisites by the governor and by Republican leadership was that each one has to stand up on its own, which means each one will have to run their own campaigns, which means each one could be even defeated in the legislature when we come back on May 1st. And it's something that we tried. We felt it was the best approach to have one bond package, but we were unsuccessful. But it does show and illustrate that Democrats all session long and during the 126th were willing to compromise, keep our principles, but make sure that we were putting Maine people first.
We're going to need to go to a break. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Sweetser, seeking mentors for children with mental and behavioral health needs. Learn more at sweetser.org.
On the next Fresh Air, comic Hurry Kondabolu.
I used to do a bit where I used to read the U.S. citizenship application on stage. There were questions about, like, whether you were affiliated with a terrorist organization, which is like, why would you even click yes?
He was a writer and correspondent for W. Kamau Bell's TV series. He has a new comedy album. Join us.
You can join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 here on MPBN Radio. MPBN now has a powerful new educational resource for teachers here in Maine, PBS Learning Media. Learning Media is a new on-demand media service for educators that provides easy access to a wide range of classroom-ready, curriculum-targeted resources for grades K through 12. Go to mpbn.net for more information and to explore this free educational resource.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, wrapping up the latest legislative session. With me in our Portland studio, Senate President Justin Alphon, who is a Democrat. In our Augusta studio, MPBN State House Bureau Chief A.J. Higgins, and with A.J., House Republican Leader Ken Fredette. We invite you to join our conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. You can email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. AJ, I'm going to take one quick step back. Even though the legislature has formally adjourned, will likely still be called back. Can you explain what's going on and what's still left to be done?
I think that obviously the big issue that's going to be awaiting this legislature is to now find out exactly how the governor will act on a number of these bills, so some of the high-profile bills that we dealt with in the last week here. The legislature, I'm not exactly certain of the time. It was in the early morning hours of Friday morning, 1 a.m., I'm told. And that starts the clock for the governor. He has 10 days, excluding Sunday, to veto any of these bills. And the legislature, I believe, has tentatively set May 1st as the opportunity to return back to deal with any of these bills that have been vetoed by the governor, and at which point they will either sustain or override those measures. At that point, the legislature will adjourn, the phrase they use is sine die, and it basically means without day, but it technically is the end of this second regular session.
Okay, so we're dealing with more bills that will, many of them will likely be vetoed. Ken Fredette, a lot has been made this session about Governor LePage's record-setting veto season, if you'll call that, but you don't think it's quite fair to just characterize it by looking at the numbers.
Well, I think it's previously been said, one of the former presidents of the United States had said that, you know, sometimes it's important to stop bad legislation as it is to pass good legislation. And I think the governor has taken the liberty to look at bills and you know, what's the impact on the executive branch or on the departments and say, you know, is this something that's in the best interest of Maine? I think at the same time, we saw a number of bills that were, I think, almost bordered on silly. There was one to sell the Blaine House, one to take the governor's pension away. You know, we had bills for moratoriums on charter schools, which the governor obviously would be opposed to. And so I believe there's been somewhere around 130 vetoes, and Republicans between the House and the Senate have been able to sustain about 90% of those. And so I think only 13 have become law over his veto. And so I think Republicans have been united in what we believe are the values that we think are going to move Maine forward in terms of, you know, job creation and trying to keep young people here in the state of Maine.
So Republican leadership does indeed support most, if not all, of the governor's vetoes.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think we you know, what binds people together, I think, as Republicans is what we believe in, which is smaller government, you know, less taxes, more individual liberty. And when you sort of look at these bills, I think there are pieces of all of those in each of those. And so when you're talking to caucuses and they understand those, they reevaluate, they get new information and likely, you know, are able to sustain those vetoes.
Of course, one area where Republicans will probably take issue with the governor would be on the issue of the budget. If I'm not mistaken, Ken, in the supplemental that we dealt with earlier this year, the governor basically allowed that supplemental budget to become law without his signature, simply because he knew that there was such overwhelming support in the House and the Senate for the proposal. The second supplemental is now sitting on the governor's desk, and it seems likely, don't you agree, that he will allow that also to become law without his signature?
I don't think that's necessarily correct. I think the governor is taking a hard look at this budget. He's expressed, I think, some concern about the funding mechanism, which delays payments to the hospitals. And so, you know, if I was to project, you know, I'm just going to guesstimate, you know, maybe a 30-40% chance that he vetoes that because of that issue. And, you know, my other issue is I think even if he doesn't veto that, you know, because of that funding mechanism, you know, quite frankly, it's likely that we may be back here later this summer, this fall, to have to deal with, you know, ongoing, you know, problems with the budget.
Yeah, he has threatened to bring this legislature back, even perhaps, I think he's referred to, this spring. Clearly, that can't be a prospect that either Republicans or Democrats look forward to.
Justin Alphon, I want to bring you into the conversation we started after the break with the vetoes. Republicans feel as though many of these bills were really traps, trying to get the governor to be in a position in an election year to have to veto things that the legislative leadership knew he would veto. Is that an accurate representation?
It is not accurate, and it's unfortunate that anyone in Maine would think that. This governor has now vetoed over 140 bills in 3-plus years. That is more than any other governor in Maine's history, even the only other one-term governor, Governor Longley, who is, by all accounts, one of the most notorious vetoer our state's ever seen. And when Representative Fredette talks about these bills being just kind of setups for the governor or for Republicans, what he's not telling you is that all these bills went through the legislature, went through committees. Most of them got unanimous supports in committee. Then they went to the floor of the House and Senate, usually got big, big votes in the House and Senate, sometimes went under the hammer, so not one single legislator voted against a bill. And then when the governor vetoed it, we are seeing many, many Republicans flip their votes. And I don't think that's what Mainers really actually support, is someone saying, I'm only going to support it until politics gets involved. And I'll bring up a couple bills that the governor just vetoed. One about teacher accountability. this ensures that we have the best teachers in the classroom. And what we did as a legislature said, we are going to leave it up to the local communities to decide how you create that accountability system. Because I know firsthand that what we're doing here in Portland is very different than what we're doing where I grew up in Dexter. And so leave it to the superintendent, to the teachers, to their boards to come up with the best accountability structure for them. The governor vetoed it, saying that, no, actually, the state should decide. Well, to me, that seems really interesting, and it should be interesting to a lot of Maine voters, because this is the governor who goes out of his way to attack the federal government when they come down with top-down policies. But here he is going against locals, local control, and against teachers and superintendents and boards having the best ability to come up with the best system to ensure that we have the best teachers in the classroom. That's just one of 140 different vetoes, and I don't think that's a setup, Jen. And if it is, then I guess I'm missing something.
Ken, I'm going to give you a chance to respond, but first I want to give out our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. You can also send an email to talk@mpbn.net or post on our Facebook page or send us a tweet. Ken, would you like to respond to Justin?
Yeah, I think that President Alphon actually highlights an important bill, which I think I personally was aware of governor's concerns of this particular bill early on. I had a meeting on Friday of, I think, after this bill was passed that said tried to work on some amendments so that we could avoid a veto. The next following Monday morning we came in, we continued to talk about the governor's opposition to this bill and brought in Representative Hubbell, our Republican members of the committee, Education Committee and whatnot. And so the veto was not a surprise here. And so I think it does highlight that I think we tried to work with our House colleagues, our Senate colleagues, and Republicans and Democrats to try to forge bills that can pass bipartisan support as well as the executive branch. And so sometimes we're just not able to get there, and that's just the way it works out.
Okay, thank you. We're going to Brian in Canaan. Hi, Brian. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. I want to announce my candidacy for governor. I don't sound normal all the time because of medical conditions. However, I am running because I am a recipient of MaineCare SSI benefits and food stamp benefits, also known as the SNAP program. And I think our current governor has too big of a potential of getting reelected, and that could negatively affect the people that are on the same kind of benefits.
Okay, Brian, we're actually...
I don't have a good chance of winning. I know I don't have a chance of winning, but disabled people are allowed to use their skills and courtesy in a way to help their own lives, and I'd like to do that.
Well, Brian, we're having our conversation is about the accomplishments or lack of accomplishments in this legislative session. Do you have any thoughts about those?
I am confident that our legislature, the House and Senate, are doing a fairly good job. However, I think that our governor is not allowing good bills to be signed, and that's unfortunate.
Okay, and finally, you said you're announcing for governor. What's your last name, Brian?
Phipps, P-H-I-P-P-S. I've been on the show before in a good way. And can I just give one piece of information?
Quickly, yes, go ahead.
Yeah, my candidacy could be, you could see my candidacy on Facebook at facebook.com/Brian for governor, B-R-I-A-N.
All right, thanks for your call. Going to Andrew in Gorham. Hi, Andrew, go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Yes, hi. Thanks so much for this show today. I just had some thoughts from folks that, you know, that I've heard through the grapevine. I'm in the behavioral health field as well as, you know, organizing community events and so forth in Portland. And so I have kind of a wide range of demographics of people. And I think the general consensus is our roads and our bridges are falling apart. There's less help for single moms and children at risk, whether it be food or health insurance. And all of these things, amongst many others, I'm sure you know, all of these issues are putting a huge burden on Maine people. And it just seems like, you know, Augusta has become kind of a mini Washington, D.C., where things go round and round and nothing gets done. And at the end of the day, the citizens of Maine suffer. And they're the ones that pay the car repairs. They're the ones that go into debt or bankruptcy because of medical bills. And I just... You know, I'm just curious what solutions are going to be there here going forward in the future, because these things are happening.
Andrew, I think I've got your point. Senate President Justin Alfond, are we becoming a mini Washington and Augusta? Augusta has always prided itself. Legislators on both sides of the aisle, I've been a reporter in Maine for 20 years, have always prided themselves on not being like Washington and not having this vitriolic, partisan atmosphere. Is that changing now?
Well, I think, first of all, the results speak for themselves. We've got budgets done. We've got bonds done. We've passed a big omnibus energy bill. There are a lot of things that we did get accomplished. And I think just in that one statement, that's probably more than most that's happened in D.C. Over the past couple of years. So I want to make sure that the listeners realize that, you know, when you send us up to Augusta, we know we have a job to do. And for the most part, 85 to 90% of all the bills we look at, we do together. It's that 15% or so that we have very robust conversations that I think Mainers want us to have, asking the tough questions, really making sure that this is going to be policy that can survive the long term. And I would just suggest that until, you know, this current governor got in the Blaine House, I think that most of the work we did was usually done professionally. It was done bipartisanly, and it was done where Mainers could say, we definitely aren't looking like Washington. But, you know, unfortunately, you know, you see the personal attacks by the governor. You see, you know, his rants. You see the things that he does daily to really embarrass our state. You know, it has changed the culture, and I think it's for the worse. And I would just say that just going to roads and bridges, you know, we did pass a $100 million bond in the first part of the session. Clearly, it's springtime, and we're seeing lots of potholes, and we're seeing how bad our roads and bridges are, and we have more work to do. A report was done that said that we could actually invest $250 million for the next decade, and we would just get to a place where we are actually getting to a point where our roads and bridges are where they should be to help our economy, to help people, and to help the state of Maine. And so I appreciate the comment, and we're going to keep doing the best we can and keep holding us accountable.
All right. Well, House Republican Leader Ken Fredette, how would you respond to Andrew's thinking about what's happening up in Augusta?
Well, I think Senate President Alfond has a selective memory. I think if you can only go back about 18 months ago, back to the 125th legislature, where we passed the $400 million tax cut in a bipartisan way, where we were able to reform some of our Medicaid programs in a bipartisan way. There was not the rhetoric, there was not the rants on the radio, on the TV shows about, you know, Governor LePage. And this has all been, you know, for the last 14 months, 16 months, I've been the Republican leader in the House. And there's been this constant, you know, let's beat up on the governor. That's all we've heard about. We all agreed back in 2013 that we all had to pay the hospitals. We had a huge debt that was due. We all agreed to that. But what did we do? We spent 6 months going back and forth about how that was going to get done. The Democrats tried to tie Medicaid expansion to it. That failed. At the end of the day, they ended up passing it as it was written. And so, you know, we're on to our fourth Medicaid expansion bill, I think we voted on last week. The Democrats have done nothing but want to play politics to make this governor look bad. They are obsessed with getting this governor out of office because they want complete, absolute control in Augusta. And that's what they've been obsessed with. And I think when we talk about what's been going on in Augusta versus what's been going on in Washington, D.C., I simply look at what happened in the 125th versus the 126th.
Okay.
That is the comparison.
Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. We're going to take another short break. When we return, more of your comments and questions. Please stay with us.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does the Dexter Group of Wells Fargo Advisors. Investment advisory and asset management services since 1995. In Portland and at thedextergroup.us.
Intelligence Squared US, where the world's leading thinkers debate today's most critical issues.
You've seen record numbers of people in this generation starting their own businesses.
We have very high youth unemployment.
We're entrepreneurs. We're innovators.
We have $1 trillion in student loan debt.
We were raised to know that we are competing in a global world.
The next motion up for debate. Millennials don't stand a chance.
And that's coming up in just a few minutes at 1 o'clock here on MPBN. MPBN Radio strives to bring you news, information, and public affairs which provide a better understanding of ideas, events, and cultures around the world. The BBC has been a valued addition to our schedule in recent years, adding a comprehensive and global perspective to our news mix. Comprehensive BBC coverage can also be heard during the overnights, right after the takeaway, starting at 1 a.m. right up to 6 a.m. NPBN Radio brings you The World, courtesy of the BBC, exploring the important issues and learning what the world is thinking, saying, and doing. BBC Overnights, here on NPBN.
Back from break. Welcome. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, completing the latest session in Augusta. With me in our Portland studio, Senate President Justin Alfond, a Democrat. In our Augusta studio, MPBN State House Bureau Chief A.J. Higgins, and with A.J., House Republican Leader Ken Fredette. We invite you to join the conversation. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Going to Glenn in Bucksport. Hi, Glenn. Go ahead.
Hi. How are you doing?
Good.
Good. Hey, I'm just a regular old citizen of Maine, but I got to say, you know, that Senate President Alfond, he kind of demeans the office by constantly going after Governor LePage. You know, I'm just kind of sick and tired of his whining. But anyway, my question is, you know, Senator Alfond, wouldn't it be better for the taxpayers if all of our money didn't go to Washington, D.C., so that it could come back to us and maybe they could give us a tax cut for this Medicare expansion? You know, it seems like it goes to Washington, then they decide they can send it back to us. But wouldn't it just be better to cut federal taxes and maybe, you know, same idea with state taxes so that it doesn't have to go through all this cycle and we could just keep our money to start with?
Well, thanks for the question, and I do appreciate it. I think your question involves jurisdictions that I can't control. I mean, I can't decide what monies we send to Washington and how that cycle of money comes back. But what I can do is talk about what happens when the money comes back to the state of Maine or the programs that the federal government is offering that the state of Maine is either not taking advantage of or simply isn't a part of. And I'll talk about a couple. One, under this administration, we did not apply for the 21st Century Grant program to help our youngest children. This is to help our 0 to 5 year olds and to ensure that we have young people who are kindergarten ready. And it was a wonderful program. We applied previously in the 125th, and then this year we decided not to apply, and that would have been up to $40 million that could have helped young students and young families across the state of Maine. And you bring up a good point around Medicaid expansion. In order for the federal government to create this program, they cut Medicare, and the state of Maine's cut to Medicare was close to $900 million. By not accepting funds for Medicaid expansion, we're losing a million dollars a day. I apologize, $1 million a day. So that's about $360 million a year. And that money's not going to come to the state of Maine. It's going to go to another state that expands. Our governor is the only governor in the country that has vetoed Medicaid expansion. There's been other governors who said no to expansion, but this is the only governor who said this is not a good deal for our health care, this is not a good deal for our economy, this is not a good deal for the state of Maine. And so it is unfortunate because we are sending a lot of money to D.C., and this governor is not capitalizing on the monies that could come back to Maine.
Okay, going to Brian in Harpswell. Go ahead, Brian.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I just had a quick comment about the speaker who said that, you know, the Democrats wanted to control Augusta. At least coming from my point of view, I just really wanted to say that I think that we just want a government that is a bit less radical and maybe just a bit more willing to listen to others' viewpoints, and instead of just, you know, one way or out, I think it'd be a lot better if we had somebody who was more willing to listen to more well-rounded views. And I think that a lot of Mainers probably are a little bit more low-key about things like this and less intense. That's all I wanted to say.
Ken Fredette, I think Brian is responding to your comment. Go ahead.
Well, I think the Senate President actually said it earlier, is that, you know, 85 to 90% of what we actually do, we actually do in a bipartisan fashion. And, I think while we even have had 130 vetoes, there's about 2,000 bills that we deal with up here. And so Even as a percentage of that, I mean, it's a very small percentage where there are areas where we don't agree. And so the rhetoric has, I think, really been focused on the fact that we are in an election year. And so I think at the end of the day, I think Maine people are going to be proud of the work that that we do down here in Augusta, even if an election season is a little bit uglier than what it might normally be.
All right. Thanks for your call, Brian. Going to Beverly in Belfast. Hi, Beverly. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm curious about the environmental accomplishments in the LePage administration. When he was running for governor, Governor LePage refused to believe that climate change was reality, and now he celebrates it because he seems to be hinting that it will open shipping lanes once the Arctic melts. Today is John Muir's birthday, and tomorrow is Earth Day. I would like your guests to focus a little attention, for once, I might add, on environmental accomplishments in this session of the legislature.
All right, Ken Fredette, would you like to answer Beverly's question about environmental accomplishments?
Well, I would, actually. I think we just actually passed, I think, an important bill the other day talking about milfoil in lakes. We did that in a bipartisan fashion. That was actually addressed at the appropriations level, I think, in terms of funding that bill. We looked at the mining rules that in the 125th, we passed a bill to actually Senator Representative John Martin had put a bill in to allow mining of, I believe, gold, particularly up in Aroostook County. The department spent 2 years on those rules, and those rules were rejected by the Democratic legislature, and we're going to go back to square one on that. Which is going to have an impact on job creation and opportunities up in Aroostook County and in other places around the state. And so, you know, I think that the Republicans are open to the idea of how we protect our environment. I've lived in Maine for 50 years, and we know that the environment and our natural resources is how, particularly once you get north of Portland, how we've been able to grow our economies and allow our young people to stay here in Maine. And so I think it's a really important issue for Republicans.
Jennifer, A.J. Higgins here. One of the issues that dominated quite a bit of the discussion during the last month or so involved the issue of solar rebates as far as clean energy legislation is concerned. And basically, this would have imposed a 60-cent a year fee on all electricity users. And it would have been used to provide rebates for people who want to put in solar arrays on their houses to reduce energy costs, and also because they are proponents of clean energy. And that particular bill really demonstrated the division, I think, on the issue here in the legislature. The governor wound up, it passed, and the governor wound up vetoing the bill. The veto was overridden in the House, but not in the Senate. And I presume that Justin could probably comment a little bit on some of the discussion that went on there.
Yeah, thanks, AJ. Yeah, I mean, that one bill was a million-dollar proposal to help our small businesses, not only around solar panels, but also heat pumps. And it was $500,000 for each. And the $500,000 for heat pumps was going to go to our most vulnerable, the elderly, who right now are paying excruciating bills to heat their homes and to really ensure that they can have a better energy source. So unfortunately, we could not get the Senate to override the governor's veto. And so, you know, those programs around solar and helping small businesses using a renewable energy and heat pumps, which is a much more efficient way of producing energy, won't go anywhere this session, but I'm sure they'll be brought back next session. I'm going to take the question on another way and food hubs. The more food that we can sustainably harvest here in the state of Maine means less trucking in of food. It means more food coming from our own soil. And this is another bill that the governor has vetoed. We were going to, through this piece of legislation, support our local fishermen and farmers and working with schools to get more healthy meals into our schools. Unfortunately, the governor has vetoed this bill, and it just strikes me as odd because this is one of the things that the governor has talked about, supporting our local economy and supporting our fisheries. And so he has vetoed that. And also, you know, the governor has been very weak on toxic chemicals. We all know that the Kids Safe Product Act was passed bipartisanly in the 123rd, and we keep adding more and more chemicals to the list to ensure that young mothers and babies are not in the way of harmful chemicals. And the governor has done basically nothing for the last 3+ years. And it's unfortunate because there are usually alternatives from companies so that we can give safer products to moms and young families. And as you know, as a dad of an 8-day-old, I can really appreciate, you know, trying to keep toxics out of our system and out of our product stream.
Wow, Justin, congratulations. Jennifer. You know what? I need to go to a call right now. A Representative Henry Baer from the Holton Maliseet Indian he's the representative for the tribal perspective. Go ahead, Representative Henry Baer.
Good afternoon, everybody. President Alphonse, Majority Leader, or correction, House Minority Leader, forget. I'm driving down I-95, heard you conversing, and I had a perspective I thought I'd shoot your way. One is we're in need for, you know, support for main care expansion. We're concerned as well about how we're going to do that. We're also trying to get the tax breaks, tax credits, investments.
Representative Henry Baer, we can barely hear you. I think you're on a cell phone in a noisy place. So if you could ask a question or make a comment really quickly, I would appreciate it.
Okay, my question is, when do you foresee that the tribal casino operations might be able to contribute to the need for funding for expanded main care? You know, that's what we're waiting for is the...
Great. I'll ask that question. Senate President Justin Alphonse, will the casino measure come back up next session?
I'm sure casino questions will come up next session, and there's even, I'm sure, movement afoot for a citizens' referendum on casinos. What we did this session is say no to all the casinos and gaming expansion bills and said we need to do a comprehensive market study similar to what our New England neighbors have done, Massachusetts and New Hampshire, and come back with that information to the committee, the Veterans and Legal Affairs Committee, this fall, and they're going to create a comprehensive plan on how we do gaming here in the state of Maine. And that's how I would answer Representative Baer. Great question, and thanks for calling in.
Okay, thanks so much for calling in. Going to Francis in Waterville. Hi, Francis, go ahead.
Hi, Mike. Thank you very much for taking my question. Mike, it's about the governor's refusal to let administrative department heads testify before legislative committees. I was curious how long that lasted and what effect it had on the legislature's ability to function efficiently.
Okay, Ken Fredette, were you able to understand the question?
Well, my understanding is we worked on that issue over the fall and into the winter, and by the time we came back into session, we had an agreement that we'd worked out with Democrat and Republican leadership with the executive branch, and my understanding is that, by and large, that was a non-issue this session.
I would just answer the question a little bit differently. I mean, we all know that there are three branches of government, judicial, executive, and legislative, and in order for us to function very well, there has to be the independence, but also the collaboration when we're calling commissioners or agency heads in front of committees, that they show up, they give the information in a timely way, and that allows us to be productive in the legislature. What the governor did for most of the summer, fall, and all the way up into the beginning of the session was refuse any access to any of his commissioners, agency heads. Everything had to be given to departments in questions, written. Sometimes those questions would get answered. Oftentimes they wouldn't. They'd be very delayed. And it really hurt the whole entire legislature. And it hurt the state of Maine. And it was unfortunate. But Representative Fredette was right. We worked very hard with our Republican colleagues and the executive branch to get an agreement so that they could come in front of the legislature during the session. But talk about wasted time and talk about wasted energy. This is just not what a CEO of a state should be doing.
A.J. Higgins, we have just a few seconds. How unusual was this order at the beginning of the session and to have to work through this?
I thought that it really in many ways sort of set the tone, as we mentioned earlier. And it put, I've got to say, I felt it put Republicans and Democrats in an uncomfortable position in terms of the revenue sharing component that we talked about earlier, in that we had the governor threatening not to issue bonds that were approved by the voters. It sort of put Republicans in a position of being made to look as though they don't support municipal revenue sharing, and it was you saw this kind of, I think, bantering, if you will, between.
Okay, thanks so much, AJ. We're going to have to say goodbye. Thank you all for joining us today. AJ Higgins, MPBN State House Bureau Chief, Ken Fredette, House Republican Leader, and Justin Alphonse, Senate President. Today's program was produced by Jonathan Smith. Jonathan Woodward answered your calls, and Nikki Shields ran the board. We had additional help from the MPBN web team. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our podcast, by visiting mpbn.net/MaineCalling. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. Tomorrow on the program, what does it take to be a small farmer in Maine? Join me for a conversation about small farming in the state. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.